Trinadapi Sunichena Tadariva Sahishnuna Amanina Manadena Kirtaniya Sadahari Harinama 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 Eva Kevalam Kalo Nastyeva 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 Gatiranyata. Welcome everybody to Gita Bhavan, the home of Pushpa and Shekhar Agrawal. And those of you on the internet, we welcome you too. We are continuing our Bhagavad Gita seminar. Today we're going to try to cover at least two chapters, chapters 8 and 9, and perhaps the first part of chapter 10. If you are ready to proceed, please indicate by chanting the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra in unison together, everyone. Chapter 8 has 28 verses entitled Attaining the Supreme. Depending on the kind of transcendentalist you are, the Supreme can either be one of three destinations. If you are an impersonalist, then your understanding of the Supreme is the Brahman, the Brahma Jyoti, the all-pervasive oneness. If you are a yogi, a true yogi, then your concept of the Supreme is realization of Param Atma, the Super Soul. And if you are a bhakta, a devotee, a personalist, then your goal or understanding of the Supreme is Vaikuntha, the abode of God, where there is no anxiety. And this abode of God, Vaikuntha, has innumerable transcendental planets. Supreme of all that planets is known as Krishna Loka, the abode of Krishna, which has three neighborhoods, Dvaraka, Mathura, and Vrindavan. And depending on your strength of devotion, you are awarded one of those realms. Just so that I see who I'm talking to, how many want to go to the impersonal Brahman? You want to go to the impersonal Brahman? Wait till you hear the other choices. Who wants to realize Paramatma? You can only pick one now. And who wants to go to Vaikuntha? Who wants to go to Krishna Loka? Oh, then you can't go to the others. You got to pick one. Now, in Krishna Loka, who wants to reside in Dwaraka? Who wants to reside in Mathura? Who wants to reside in Vrindavan? See, these are the different choices. So now I'll rephrase the question. Are you ready now? Who wants to go to impersonal Brahman? Good. Who wants Paramatma realization? Good. Who wants a Vaikuntha planet? Okay, you want a Vaikuntha planet. You want any Vaikuntha planet? Oh, then don't say. Who wants to go to Krishna Loka? In which neighborhood? Okay, who wants Dwaraka? Who wants Mathura? Who wants Vrindavan? All right. There's unlimited. Unlimited. No. Ram has his planet. That's not Vaikuntha. All the planets of God are Vaikuntha. But the topmost planet, the topmost, that's Krishna. Very good. There's the picture. All right. So verses 1 through 7, Krishna answers 8 questions of Arjuna. Arjuna wants to know what is the self, what are fruitive activities, what are the demigods. But the final question of his 8 questions, what should I do at the time of death? Therefore, verse number 5. So you see there's 3 verses, 5, 6, and 7. These to me are fundamental verses of Bhagavad Gita. They go together. Look at verse number 5. And whoever at the end of his life quits his body, remembering me alone, at once attains my nature. Of this there is no doubt. So Krishna's nature is 3 things. What is Krishna's nature? Sat, Chit, Ananda. That's the nature he's referring to. Eternal, full of knowledge, full of bliss. That's the nature that he's referring to. So, remembering Krishna alone, and then Krishna's guarantee, of this there is no doubt. Then in verse number 6, he gives you the general understanding. Whatever state of being one remembers when he quits the body, O son of Kunti, that state he will attain without fail. So either you're going to think of Krishna, or whatever you are thinking of, that's going to determine your next life. The classic example, Bharat. What was he thinking of at the time of death? Deer. And Krishna then gave him his next life as a deer. But because Bharat was this close to perfection, he was practically on the stage of bhava. Practically, he was so close. So Krishna did not abandon him. He had to take birth as a deer, but as a deer, he fully understood that he was Bharat, that he had now taken birth as a deer, and that he had messed up. This was a special blessing from Krishna. Normally, when you take birth as an animal, you're totally in the mode of ignorance. There's no consciousness that you are spirit soul. So this was a special blessing. And therefore, in the form of a deer, he stayed near an ashram where there were devotees. He lived his one life as a deer. His next life was the son of a Brahmin in the name of Jarda Bharat, and he achieved perfection within 3 lifetimes. Therefore, number 7, because these 3 verses go together. Therefore, the conclusion. Arjuna, you should always think of me in the form of Krishna, and at the same time, carry out your prescribed duty of fighting. So this is, in my humble opinion, one of the most important verses of Bhagavad Gita, because it applies to every one of us. Of course, we're not expected to fight a war, but every one of us has to execute a prescribed duty. But at the same time, we have to think or go on remembering the form of Krishna. And remembering the form of Krishna also includes his name, fame, form, pastimes, entourage, instructions. Anything, as much as you can remember Krishna, and at the same time execute your prescribed duty. What does he say here? With your activities dedicated to me, and your mind and intelligence fixed on me, you will attain me without doubt. So these are Krishna's guarantees. These are Krishna's assurances. And we should have full faith in them. Actually, one of the main things of this Bhagavad Gita is that we develop firm faith. Last night, I was supposed to speak on chapter 17 of Bhagavad Gita, divisions of faith. So, didn't turn out that way. But faith is a very, very important item. Indeed, Lord Chaitanya says, what's the difference between a neophyte, a second class, and a topmost devotee? Their degree of faith. Now the question, how do I get it? I don't have it. How do I get it? Association. You get that faith when you associate with someone who does have it. Classic example would be Prabhupada's early disciples. They had no faith. Many of Prabhupada's early disciples were atheists. But by Prabhupada's association, they became faithful. The atheist became a theist by the potency of Prabhupada's association. So, if we want to increase our faith, find somebody who has more faith than you, whose faith is fixed up and determined, and by their association, you will also get it. We go to the next section. Attaining the Supreme, verses 8 through 15, is all about attaining the Supreme. And two verses in this section are of primary importance. Verse number 14, for one who always remembers me without deviation, I am easy to obtain. So normally, God is not easy. It's not a cheap thing. Prabhupada would many times tell us that don't think that achieving God realization is a cheap thing. But it is easy if you can remember Krishna without deviation because of his constant engagement in devotional service. Because Narada Muni says this. When Narada Muni in the Bhagavatam is instructing Vyasadeva on he should write Srimad Bhagavatam, Narada says, it's been my experience, Vyasadeva, that when you are working for Krishna, automatically you remember his name, fame, form, qualities, pastimes, etc. And he says, this is bhakti yoga. Using your senses to work for Krishna and thereby remembering him, that is Narada's definition of bhakti. When we did the Bhagavad Katha, during one of those programs, Krishna Kumar said, one of these days, he wants us to do a seminar on Narada Bhakti Sutras. So I have not forgotten that. And he also likes that. So, Shekhar did indicate, if I may, that we intend to have more of these seminars here in Gita Bhavan. So perhaps in a future one next year, we can do Narada Bhakti Sutras, which you will find very delicious. It is a delicious book. All in favor, say Hari Bol. And my secretary producer has informed us that we now have 13 people online. Please say Hari Bol. And then verse 15. After attaining me, the great souls, who are yogis in devotion, never return to this temporary world, which is full of miseries, because they have attained the highest perfection. So we are yogis in devotion, or bhakti yogis. Now we may be neophytes, but still, if we engage in any one of the nine processes, then you're a bhakti yogi. Are you not hearing right now? Then you're a bhakti yogi. Okay? So, and Krishna considers you a great soul. Now, you'll never have to return to this material world. That is such a great encouragement, that if we're able to finish the course of bhakti yoga in this lifetime, we don't have to come back to this material world. And the manufacturer says, full of miseries. He said it. I believe Krishna. And Shekhar, you have just had a recent experience of the miseries of just the material body alone. It can be very miserable. Yes. And the highest perfection. The highest perfection is to return back home, back to Godhead, Vaikuntha, whichever Vaikuntha loka you like. Verses 16 to 22, comparing the two natures. So the two natures, material and spiritual. There's a material prakriti, there's a spiritual prakriti. Krishna says, from the highest planet in the material world down to the lowest, all are places of misery wherein repeated birth and death take place. Again, Krishna is the manufacturer. He's saying that even Brahmaloka, which is the highest, whether it's Brahmaloka or Patal, more or less, it's simply a place of misery. What's going to happen? Repeated birth and death. But one who attains my abode never takes birth again. We learned in chapter 2, for one who was born, death is certain. I'm very glad that we did the entire chapter 2. Since it was a summary, we should reflect whenever we can verses in chapter 2, which are substantiated later. So, we learned that for one who was born, death is certain. For one who has died, birth is certain. But here, if you can achieve Vaikuntha, you don't have to take birth again. We continue. Yet there is another unmanifest nature, which is eternal and is transcendental to this manifested and unmanifested matter. So, this material world is sometimes manifest, sometimes unmanifest, because there's a cycle. The material, the whole cosmic manifestation is eventually wound up into the body of Mahavishnu. All the souls who are unfit to go to the kingdom of God remain merged in Mahavishnu, and they have what is called a sleeping session for millions of years, until once again Mahavishnu breathes out, and then all the souls pick up from where they left off, just like we do at night. We go to sleep. When we wake up in the morning, we remember, oh, now I have to do this, now I have to do this, now I have... We immediately remember by the help of who? Who helps us? Super soul, yes. Super soul reminds us, hey, got to go to work today. Let's go. So, the soul immediately is reminded, all the desires Krishna reminds in the heart, and we pick up from where we left off. So there's a period of manifestation, and there's a period of unmanifested. But The spiritual world doesn't go through that. There is no manifest and unmanifest in the spiritual realm. It's ever existing. When all this world is annihilated, that part remains as it is. So that's a big difference between the material and spiritual worlds. The spiritual world is ever existing. 21. That which the Vedantists describe as unmanifest and infallible, that which is known as the supreme destination, that place from which, having attained it, one never returns, that is my supreme abode. So, more than once already, Krishna is indicating that if you reach his abode, you don't come back. So it's more than once. And then 22. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is greater than all, is attainable by unalloyed devotion. That is big. Because there is no alternative. If you want to attain this spiritual sky, if you want to attain this planet, Krishna's supreme abode, unalloyed devotion. There's no other way. You have to come to the stage of unalloyed devotion. So this verse number 22, I believe this is the first place where Krishna says, in order to attain me, you need unalloyed devotion. He will repeat that at the end of chapter 11, and he'll say it again in chapter 18. If you want to know him, if you want to attain him, if you want to understand him, unalloyed devotion. Unalloyed means pure, nothing mixed. Although he is present in his abode, he is all-pervading and everything is situated within him. This will be revisited in chapter 9. This last part, although he is present in his abode. So, Krishna is talking about himself in the third person. Krishna is talking about himself saying, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, as if it's somebody different from him, when it's actually him. So, first of all, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, right? He is present in his abode. So, even when Krishna was here 5,000 years ago, it wasn't that he was missing in the spiritual world. He was still there. He's with Radharani and everybody. The spiritual world is no vacancy. It's just that he manifests a form here in the material world. So, no matter what, Krishna is always in his abode. Unlike us. Right now, you're not home, except for Shekhar and Pushpa. You're here, you're not home. Because you haven't achieved the mystic yoga being able to be two places at once, where Krishna can. So Krishna is in his abode, right? And he's all-pervading. Now how is Krishna all-pervading? Two ways. Is he not in everyone's heart? He's all-pervading. And is not everything his energy? If everything is his energy, in that sense also, he's all-pervading. Just like when we come to this house, we know this is all Pushpa and Shekhar's property. Everything I see, imperceptibly it says, belonging to Shekhar and Pushpa. In other words, this, right? So for a devotee, everything devotee sees, oh, this is Krishna's property. That's how a devotee sees. A devotee has this broad vision. All right, there's countries, there's cities, there's towns, that's all right. But actually, everything is Krishna's property. Everything is Krishna's energy. So, this concept that Krishna is within everything and yet Krishna is separate, achintya bheda bheda, this will also be described in chapter 9. Now we finish up chapter 8, the two ways of passing from this world. According to Vedic opinion, there are two ways of passing from this world, one in light and one in darkness. When one passes in light, he does not come back. But when one passes in darkness, he returns. Now, verse number 27 is more important. Although the devotees know these two paths, O Arjuna, they are never bewildered. Therefore, be always fixed in devotion. In other words, it's not that we have to worry, ooh, am I going to die in the light? Or no, you don't have to worry about that. Just be a devotee that overrides whether or not you pass in darkness, or it doesn't matter now. You have now, once you become a devotee, then whether you pass at night or in darkness, light, it doesn't matter. That just being a devotee is good enough. Krishna will take care of you. That's why Krishna is saying to Arjuna, be fixed in devotion. Just be fixed in devotion. So you got to ask yourself, am I prepared to be fixed in devotion? That's the only question. Otherwise, yes, you should worry. If you're not going to be fixed on devotion, if you're going to remain karmakanda, then you have to be worried. But if you're going to be fixed in devotion, you don't have to worry about it. Because that remembrance of Krishna always is your insurance policy. So just always remember Krishna. The final verse, a person who accepts the path of devotional service is not bereft of the results derived from studying the Vedas, the results from performing austere sacrifices, the results of giving charity, or the results of pursuing philosophical or fruitive activities. Simply by performing devotional service, he attains all these, and at the end reaches the supreme eternal abode. So this final verse of this chapter should make you feel very peaceful and calm, and you should rest assured, because in chapter 9 Krishna will point out, I carry what you lack, I preserve what you have. My story, I wanted to be a rock and roll musician. But when I joined the temple, they said, no guitar. So I didn't touch the guitar for 4 years. Then one day the temple president gave me $50. He said, go buy a guitar. Thank you, Krishna. I didn't ask. Krishna in his heart told him, give Nirantara a fifth. That's why I love Krishna. Now, I hadn't picked up the guitar in 4 years. I'm telling you honestly, as soon as I started to play, I could play better than I ever played before. That's Krishna. And I immediately started writing my songs. So that taught me that ninth verse, ninth chapter, which we're going to study next. I preserve what you have, and I carry what you lack. That was a great lesson. I didn't miss anything. I didn't lose anything. And I could play better. It was a miracle. Sri Krishna Bhagavan ki. All right, before we go to chapter 9, we'll do a quick bhajan. And my producer says we now have 23 devotees. Say Hari Bol. Okay.
Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari. Jaya Radha
Punjabi Party. Radha Madhava Punjabi Party. Govi Janna Vallabha Giri Varadhari. Govi Janna Vallabha Giri Varadhari. Yasoda Nandana Braja Janaranjana. Yasoda Nandana Braja Janaranjana. Jamuna Tira Vannachari. Jamuna Tira Vannachari. Jai Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari. Gopi Janna Vallabha Giri Varadhari. Yasodha Nandana Braja Janaranjana. Jamuna Tira Vanachari. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya Bolo. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So chapter 9 has 34 verses entitled The Most Confidential Knowledge. So in chapter 2 we learned confidential knowledge. What was that confidential knowledge we learned in chapter 2? Whoever answers this question gets a star. That's not what we learned in chapter 2. We're not the body and we are soul. Both have to be there. Two sides of the coin. That's confidential knowledge. Knowing that. Now, what about the mind? Are we the mind? Nobody knows? Not the mind either. Thank you. Yes, you can't be both. Then that would mean the mind is the soul. Would some people think? Like my brother. My brother Peter thinks the mind is the soul. No, we're not the body. We're not the mind. Why? Because the mind is the subtle material body. So, we're a spirit soul. And we're not this body and not this mind. Or false ego. So that's confidential knowledge. More confidential knowledge would be knowledge of general devotional service, or it could be knowledge of super soul, which is different from soul. Simultaneously, one and different. They're both soul, but one is supreme, One is subordinate. Which one are you? Huh? No, but are you supreme or subordinate? Subordinate, yes. Right. If he said supreme, then what philosophy is that? Ah, very good. Very good. Yes, Mayavad. So now we're going to come to the most. There's confidential, more confident, most confidential. Are we ready to proceed? Verses 1 through 3. The Supreme Personality of Godhead said, "My dear Arjuna, because you are never envious of me, I shall impart to you this most confidential knowledge and realization, knowing which you shall be relieved of the miseries of material existence." So the first thing, never envious. Because it was envy why we came here in the first place. The original sin is envy. Same description as given in the Bible is the same description that's given in terms of why we left the spiritual sky. Envy. So, and the Bhagavatam, very second verse of Bhagavatam, says the same thing. Paramo nirmatsaranam satam. If you want to understand Bhagavatam, leave the envy at the door. So, envy begins with envy of God. And once you become envious of God, then you envy anything that belongs to God, like my neighbor, like anything I see, God's property. So this envy of God, this is the original sin. So knowledge and realization, and if you can understand this, you'll be relieved of the miseries of material existence. Same thing is given in Nectar of Devotion, Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, that pure devotional service immediately relieves one of all material distress. There are six, we used to recite it every class, the six characteristics of pure devotional service. Minimizes liberation, puts one in transcendental bliss, immediately frees one from any kind of material suffering. Pure devotional service. So that's what we should be praying for. That's better than ibuprofen. We should be praying for pure devotional service. This knowledge is the king of education, the most secret of all secrets. It is the purest knowledge, and because it gives direct perception of the self by realization, it is the perfection of religion. That is a big line. Direct perception of the self by realization, not by hypothesis, by realization. In other words, you understand it, you experience it. That's real religion. Most people think religion is some hocus pocus, pie in the sky, empty promise in the end. Just be a good boy and girl, and in the end you'll go to heaven. I didn't buy into that religion. This is the religion I bought in. That you will get direct perception of the self by realization. And anyone who is sincerely chanting, little by little, he or she gets a glimpse of that. Little by little, you're starting to get a glimpse. You're getting more encouragement, more enthusiasm, more inspiration from Krishna. You'll see how Krishna, little by little, leads you, as we will learn in chapter 10. I won't spoil the fun. It is everlasting. In other words, this is not temporary. And is joyfully performed. That's what got me. A religion that's joyful, that's for me. Especially Lord Chaitanya. Chant, dance, take prasadam. I'm in. Sign me up. No problem. Shave my head, no problem. I like this religion. Chant, dance, and take prasad. Ah, so simple. Yes, sir. Drum? No, that's when I hit this. Or when I hit this. Okay? It's called, how should I say? It happens. The price of ecstasy. Is the tambora too loud? It's too loud? It's fine? Little bit what? Okay? I aim to please. Text number 3. Those who are not faithful in this devotional service cannot attain me. Therefore, they return to the path of birth and death in this material world. Because previously, right, it was already mentioned in the previous chapter, you have to have undeviating and unalloyed devotion, then you can reach. So, here it says, what's the matter? Well, okay, there's nothing I can do about that. All right. So, if you're not faithful on the path of devotional service, then it is not possible to achieve liberation. You'll have to take birth and death. Because the reason you're not faithful is because you got distracted. You got diverted. Other things came in the way. So, Krishna says, oh, then that means you don't really want me. It means you have something else in mind. All right, take another birth and fulfill that. When you're ready for exclusive me, then you can have me. That's the way it works. But as long as there's some, even like Prabhupada used to say, still a desire to eat a rasgulla, all right, take another birth. Because Krishna and everybody else in the spiritual world only wants those who are on this same platform of unalloyed devotion. All right, verses 4 through 10 of chapter 9 is entitled Simultaneously One Indifferent. So there's a whole series of verses in this chapter where Krishna says, I'm in this material world and simultaneously I'm not. And I'm asked this question all the time, so I'll break it down real easy. Practically, I already said it earlier, but I'll say it again. Everything here in the material universe is Krishna's energy. In that sense, everything is Krishna. At the same time, Krishna is residing separately in his abode. So in that sense, he's aloof. This is going on. Everything is his energy. He also has what? Super soul everywhere in all the living beings. And living beings are everywhere. We learned that in chapter 2. Living beings are everywhere. So in that sense, he's everywhere. And at the same time, he's living in the spiritual world. There you see. Radha and Krishna are on a swing that's going on right now. In Krishna's abode, while all this is going on, he's in his abode doing that. So he's aloof. So he's simultaneously here and simultaneously not here. Because whatever is here is simply Krishna's expansion. Super soul is a reflection of Krishna. It's not really this Krishna. Super soul is four-handed, yes? Super soul is a reflection. You might recall last week, when I was explaining one concept, I told you to envision a field full of pots filled with water. And if we go in noon on a bright sunny day, in each of the pots you will see a reflection of the sun. You remember that example? There's only one sun, right? But in the pots there are 1,000 reflections. Similarly, there's one Narayan reflected in everyone's heart. At the same time, there's Radha and Krishna in their abode, aloof. So Krishna is here and he's not here. Everybody can say we're in Krishna because the material body is Krishna's energy, everything is Krishna, the soul is part and parcel of Krishna. Everything is in Krishna, and at the same time, Krishna himself originally, aloof. That's this concept of everything being simultaneously one and different. But verse number 10 is very fundamental. This material nature, which is one of my energies, is working under my direction, producing all moving and non-moving beings. Under its rule, this manifestation is created and annihilated again and again. So, material energy is one of Krishna's energies, but working under his direction. That's why you'll see in the Brahma Samhita, I chanted it yesterday before the class. I was there early. So there's that prayer in the Brahma Samhita, which describes Durga. And if I can remember, because I'm pretty sure in that purport, there explains what are the 10 things in Durga's hand. So, all right, 8 or 10, we'll find out in the Brahma Samhita. I will try to remember that, to look that up and have it for you sometime this week. So that Durga, says right here, is working under Krishna's direction. Mayadyakshena prakriti suyate sa turacharam. So that's the significance of this verse, that everything is working under Krishna's direction. Otherwise, there would be no meaning to what we learned in chapter 7, that there's no truth superior to me. Then that would be a mistake. Krishna is the supreme. He's supreme in the spiritual world, and he's supreme in the material world. Now we go to verse 11 through 15, the Duratma, the Mahatma, and others. Number 11, famous verse. Fools deride me when I descend in the human form. They do not know my transcendental nature as the Supreme Lord of all that be. So again, Krishna is reminding us that he is the Supreme Lord. And his nature is what? Transcendental. Who asked me? Yes. So now we know what is transcendental. Transcendental means not material. Transcendental also means spiritual, superior. All right? Even when he comes in the human form. Because some people think, oh, God is supreme, but when he comes as a human being, now he's not supreme. Or now he's not transcendental. Or like one Indian man once told me, when God comes, he's under Hindu law. I said, no, I'm sorry. And that's why he didn't like Krishna. He didn't like Ram either. Because he expects Ram and Krishna and all the other avatars to be under Hindu law. Sorry. Doesn't work that way. Especially when it comes to Krishna. He's above the law. So Krishna says, only fools deride me. And we see in the Krishna Leela, because even Indra, that was Indra's mistake. Indra could not believe that his Lord and Master could appear in Vrindavan as a 7-year-old boy. And that's why when Krishna stopped the Indra Yajna, right? If you read the dialogue that Indra has with the clouds, he said, these residents of Vrindavan have become influenced by this over-talkative child. Would you talk to your superior about like that? Would you say you're with your co-workers, that over-talkative boss? What's going to happen? He'll get fired. So Indra could not believe that this was his Lord and Master. Brahma, Lord Brahma, not as bad as Indra, but he wanted to test. He knew that this was Krishna, but he wanted to see, let me play a trick on him. That's all. Do you play a trick on your boss? That's not a good idea either. You don't go into the boss's office and start rearranging his desk. No. You have to have the right protocol. So Brahma also made the same mistake, thinking that he could test Krishna, that he could play a trick. Those who are thus bewildered are attracted by demoniac and atheistic views. In that deluded condition, their hopes for liberation, their fruitive activities, and their culture of knowledge are all defeated. Ravan had a great kingdom, did he not? But the day came, it's all done. Who actually took over? Vibhishan, right? He gave the kingdom of Lanka to Vibhishan, right? Who was a devotee, right? Hiranyakashipu met his destruction at the hands of Lord Nrisimha. Kamsa also, in the beginning of the 10th canto, it said that Kamsa had made an axis of evil alliance with all the demons. But after 11 years of Krishna on the planet, finished. So sometimes the question is raised, I know I've said it, but sometimes we think, oh, look at this guy. He doesn't go to temple. He cheats. He steals. He drinks. He's always in Las Vegas. He has a big house. And he does all kinds of sinful activities. And look at me. I can barely make ends meet. Maybe I should become like him. Nuh-uh. Look what's going to happen. Your hopes for liberation, your fruitive activities, your culture of knowledge, it's all going to be defeated. Just everybody gets it at the end. O son of Pritha, those who are not deluded, the great souls, are under the protection of the divine nature. They are fully engaged in devotional service because they know me as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, original and inexhaustible. So under the protection of the divine nature, that's why we chant Hare Krishna, Hare Rama. That Hare, right, that's the divine nature. We always want to be under the shelter of Krishna's spiritual energy. That's why we worship Radha and Krishna. We want to be under the very meaning of the Maha Mantra. O energy of the Lord, O Lord, engage me in your service. That's what it means to be under the protection of the divine nature. Otherwise, if I'm not under the protection of the divine nature, immediately I'm under the control of the external, material, inferior. There's a verse in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, that as soon as the living entity gives up the shelter of Radha and Krishna, Maya takes and slaps. Come here. So you only have two choices, spiritual energy or material energy. But the choice, Krishna doesn't interfere with your choice. You can choose at any time to be under the control of the material or spiritual. If you engage in hearing, chanting, remembering, praying, worshipping, the nine different kinds, then you're under the protection of the divine energy. But as soon as you're not engaged in any of the nine processes, immediately, there's no gap. Immediately, you're under the protection now, or protection. You're under the control of the material energy. So you have to be making a conscious program of always being under the protection. That's why we say, always chant. Never forget Krishna. Always remember. All right? Continuing. Always chanting my glories, endeavoring with great determination, bowing down before me, these great souls perpetually worship me with devotion. So sometimes people ask, hey, where is this chanting in the Bhagavad Gita? It's right here. One time a professor, I think from UCLA, wrote Prabhupada a letter, Professor Stahl. And he was challenging Prabhupada. I never read about this chanting in any of the Vedas. He was some Indologist. So he was having a series of correspondence with Prabhupada. And he said, this chanting that you do, I don't see this in the Vedas. Prabhupada's response was, oh, I think you overlooked this verse of Bhagavad Gita. And this was the verse Prabhupada quoted. Always chanting my glories. Krishna's name is also Krishna's glories. We chant Krishna's name, fame, form, pastimes. We're chanting Bhagavad Gita. That's Krishna's words. We chant Srimad Bhagavatam. That's Krishna's Janma Karma. And we chant Krishna's holy name. And we endeavor with great determination. We're not lazy. And yes, we bow down to Krishna. Sometimes that question is raised. Why do we have to bow down? We bow down for our own good. Because that bowing down means, my Lord, I have come for service. My Lord, I recognize you as supreme. It's not for Krishna's benefit. It's not that Krishna's looking at you. What? You didn't bow down to me? No. Krishna is saying to, and he'll say at the end of this chapter, we'll read that verse. When Krishna says bow down, when Krishna says surrender, it's for our benefit, not Krishna's. You tell your children, study, don't you? Is that for your benefit or hers? For her benefit. My mother always told me for 20 years, Nikki, brush your teeth. But I didn't listen, did I? So whatever the parent is telling the child, it's for the child's benefit. So to Krishna, we are all his children. So when he says, bow down, worship me, serve me, he's saying that out of loving concern, my dear child, it's for your benefit. In verses 16 through 19, it is a quick glimpses into some of Krishna's vibhutis, as we will read in chapter 10 also. Examples of how Krishna can be seen in terms of special things in the material world. The next two verses, what happens to the worshippers of the Vedas? When they have thus enjoyed vastly heavenly sense pleasure, and the results of their pious activities are exhausted, they return to this mortal world again. So this means people perform karmakanda, and if they do it properly, they go to the heavenly planets. And they can enjoy for hundreds and hundreds of years. But Krishna says, but when the results of their pious activities are exhausted. So it's like going on vacation. You can go on vacation until your money runs out or when it's time to come back to work. You can only go for a little while. You're not a billionaire yet. You can go for a vacation for some time, but eventually you know, I got to go back. So going to the heavenly planets is just like that. Your pious credits is your bank account. But as you enjoy, it's being spent. There's a nice explanation of this in the Bhagavatam, in the Uddhava Gita. Krishna again reviews this concept. And I remember reading very clearly. Krishna explains that when you go to the heavenly planets, you have your own airplane. And in your airplane, you are surrounded by beautiful women who chant your glories while you're traveling through the heavens. Pretty cool, huh? You have your own airplane. You're sitting back. You're traveling throughout the universe. And these beautiful women are glorifying you. But then Krishna says, when the money runs out, you fall head first out of your airplane. Welcome back to your Belinda. So Krishna makes the same point. Thus, those who seek sense enjoyment by adhering to the principles of the three Vedas achieve only repeated birth and death. Because you can't stay there forever, just as you can't stay on vacation forever. There is no such thing as permanent vacation. You have to again come back. Verses 22 through 27, the subject is worship. Ah, here it is. I mentioned this verse already. Number 22. But those who always worship me with exclusive devotion, meditating on my transcendental form, to them I carry what they lack and I preserve what they have. Because some people think, oh, if I surrender to Krishna, he's going to take everything away from me. Look, I preserve what they have. I told you the story of my guitar. I didn't lose any of my abilities. In fact, I told you, I could play better. I was playing things, I was going, where did that come from? I wrote these songs, and I was, it was coming from Krishna. And now, he carries what you lack. This you will appreciate when you go out preaching. Obviously, I have a lot of experience of this. But it's been proven time and time again. You don't have to worry. You just go out there and you just surrender to Krishna. Krishna will make you say the right thing. Sometimes, it's been my experience, I'm asked a very... Oh, I'll tell you my favorite story. Oh, I love this one. This will explain it nicely. Are you ready? When I went to India the first time was 1975. So I was in the city of Lucknow. I was with a group of devotees, under the protection of a sannyasi, and we were in this Lucknow trying to make what is called life members for ISKCON. So that particular morning, I was detained. So the sannyasi said, you wait on the corner, and another devotee in the team will come by in a rickshaw. You get on that rickshaw with him, and he'll take you to the next house that we have an appointment. So there I am, the only Westerner in the group, and I'm standing on the corner. All of a sudden, this man taps me on the shoulder. Come with me. Uh-oh. And he takes me down these stairs. And there in the basement is this big conference table. And all of a sudden, about 20 Indian men gather. And they start asking me questions. Why did Arjuna do this? Why did Krishna, and I had to, now luckily, now I had been a devotee for 2-3 years. Luckily, I had read Prabhupada's books. So they were trying to see if I was really a devotee. They thought maybe I was CIA. So they were asking me all these questions to see if I actually knew. Fortunately, as Krishna says here, I carry what Krishna made me say exactly the right answer for every question. Why this? Why that? Went on for about a half an hour. And then they said, okay, we can see that you're a real devotee. You can go. But that was very amazing. And so that teaches me, you don't have to worry. Krishna will help you. You'll say the right thing. So you come to that stage, you just surrender, and Krishna will work miracles with you. All right. My producer tells me now we have 30 devotees online. Say, Hari Bol. Text 23. Those who are devotees of other gods and who worship them with faith actually worship only me, but they do so in a wrong way. So this was brought up, I think, Friday night. So here is the actual, because some people think, because it has been misinterpreted and preached wrongly, especially by Mayavadis, that it doesn't matter who you worship. But here, it does matter. Yes, you can worship other gods. And yes, Krishna says, actually you're only worshiping me, but you're doing it in a wrong way. So why would you want to do something in the wrong way? You want to do things in the right way. And throughout Bhagavad Gita, Krishna is saying, unalloyed devotion. So unalloyed devotion is the right way. Indirect is not the right way. The right way is full unalloyed devotion. Text 25. Ah, here it is again. We saw this, I believe, similar verse in chapter 7, but here it is again. Those who worship the demigods will take birth among the demigods. It's not that you worship this particular deity and you're going to wind up in Krishna Loka. No. You worship demigods, that's where you're going. You worship the ancestors because there is a planet, Pitri Loka, the planets of the ancestors. It's mentioned in the Srimad Bhagavatam. You worship your ancestors, you'll go there. You worship ghosts and spirits? I know. In some places in Africa, South America, maybe even in India, they worship ghosts and spirits. Right? In South America, they have what is called voodoo. And I know one of my godbrothers came under a voodoo spell. So they, and you know, tantric, black, right, in India. I know. Remember our Muslim friend, right? I'll never forget. We went to this friend of hers, and they told me, was the mother or the, which side was it that did the curse? Yeah. The Muslim mother paid Hindu Brahmins to do a curse on, what, the husband? One of the, it was weird. Right? The Muslim family was paying Hindu Brahmins to do a curse on either the son-in-law or daughter-in-law. Which I found amazing that they could recognize that the Hindu was powerful. So this stuff goes on. All right? And those who worship me will live with me. Who wants to live with Krishna? Then just worship him. That's all. It's very, Bhagavad Gita is actually very simple. If you want to be with Krishna, just worship him. And in the age of Kali, Krishna Kumar, what's the easiest way to worship Krishna? Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama. Now in text number 26, it can't be any easier. If one offers me with love and devotion a leaf, a flower, fruit, or water, I will accept it. Can it be any easier? It's not that Krishna is demanding, I need $1 million, I need... No. But what is the thing he really wants in this verse? Yes, the word bhakti appears more than once. That's the only thing he's looking for. Your heart, your love. That's all he wants. Whatever you do, whatever you eat, whatever you offer or give away, whatever austerities you perform, like not eating salt and milk and ghee and butter, do that, O son of Kunti, as an offering to me. Yes, Krishna, I am offering that to you for my own good. So this is, here is the definition of karma bhakti yoga. Everything you do it for Krishna. Simple. It's so easy. Whatever it is you want to do, do it for Krishna. The remainder of the chapter is the glories of Krishna's devotees. Krishna says, I envy no one, nor am I partial to everyone. I am equal to all. Why? Because everyone is Krishna's part and parcel. Are you like, you have 5, 10 fingers. Do you discriminate? Oh, I don't like the thumb. No, you like all your fingers. Why? It's part of your body. So we're all part of Krishna. Krishna is equal to all his parts and parcels. I am equal to all. The sun is in the sky. Is the sun discriminating? Oh, I am not going to shine on the Republican's house. I'm only going to shine on the Democrat. No. The sun shines equally. Krishna is the same way. Now, if I stay in my house and never go outside, then I don't get a nice tan. I'll remain white. But that's my choice. So Krishna is available to everyone, but some people are saying, no, I don't want you, Krishna. So, it's not Krishna's fault. Krishna is equal. But whoever renders service unto me in devotion is a friend, is in me, and I am also a friend to him. So, you can become more closer to Krishna. You can be Krishna's friend. It all depends on how you want to relate. There are 5 different rasas. It begins with simply appreciating Krishna from a distance. But then you can come closer. I want to do some service. Or you can come closer. Become Krishna's friend, like Arjuna. Or you can come closer. Now I can treat Krishna like my child. And I can become closest by developing this conjugal relationship with Krishna as taught by Lord Chaitanya. Choice is yours. When I preach in the high schools and colleges sometimes on this topic, I first of all ask how many atheists in the group, and then they'll raise their hand. I say, okay, you don't want a relationship with God, fine. The rest of you who didn't raise your hand, you are theists. Now we're going to see how much of a theist you are. And then I put the five rasas on the board and I explain. And then I ask, so which one? How many of you want this one? How many of you want this one? Most of them, conjugal, it's like, huh? It goes right over the head. But there is one teacher, Professor Wilson, in Cal State, L.A. First time I did that, she said, yes, I want that conjugal relationship with God. So, the choice is yours. How deep do you want to go? How intimate do you want to go? The facility is there. The books are there to teach you how to get there. Now you make your choice. Even if one commits the most abominable action, if he is engaged in devotional service, he is to be considered saintly because he is properly situated in his determination. So, we may hear one of us has done something. But if we're devotees, we don't carry any negative, bad feelings. Krishna's not holding any bad feelings. He's saying, yes, this devotee may have done something abominable because he is engaged in devotional service. In other words, he may have had a fall down. But if he's still trying, that's all we have to worry about. Is the person still trying? So whether it be my God brother or anyone, they may have had some problem. They may have committed some abominable action. The real thing is, do they still want to continue? Or are they hopeless cases? That's the key. Prabhupada also dealt with this. He had a sannyasi disciple who one day mailed his danda back to Prabhupada saying, I can't be sannyas anymore. But then after about a year, he wanted to come back. Now his godbrothers were giving him a hard time. Prabhupada said no. Prabhupada allowed him to come back and said, you can do service. Because that's all that mattered. He may have had some problem, that's all right. The only thing that matters is this particular person determined to continue the course of devotional service? That's all we have to care about. Just like with your own children. Say your child does something horrible. Does that mean you throw them out, never want to see them again? No. If they're willing to confess and make things right, would you not? It's never going to happen. It's never going to happen. But let's say a Christian, right, does something, right, that totally breaks your heart. But it's never going to happen. But I'm just saying as an excuse, as an example. So let's say he does something. But after some time he realizes, he comes, Papa, I'm sorry. What, you're not going to, right? You'll take him back. Of course. So Krishna is the same way. We have done it so many times. So the only thing that matters is, are you prepared to continue? He quickly becomes righteous and attains lasting peace. O son of Kunti, declare it boldly that my devotee never perishes like Prahlad. Prahlad never perished no matter what Hiranyakashipu did. Prahlad always remained protected. Pandavas too. Krishna was always protecting. And Krishna had Arjuna declare it. That you declare it, my devotee never perishes. Now number 32, one of my favorite verses. O son of Pritha, those who take shelter in me, though they be of lower birth, women, Vaishyas, merchants, and Sudras, workers, can attain the supreme destination. In the Sanskrit, Papa Yonaya. And I told you the story, Prabhupada, pointing to me, Papa Yonaya. So this is a very important verse, that it doesn't matter what your material situation is. You can attain the supreme destination. It will also be mentioned at the end of chapter 18. Brahmins, Kshatriyas, Vaishyas, and Sudras can all achieve perfection. How? By worship of the Supreme Lord. That's the equalizer. Not that only the Brahmanas are going to... No. Even the Sudras, even the women, even the Papa Yonayas can achieve perfection if they take wholeheartedly. How much more this is so of the righteous Brahmins, the devotees, and saintly kings. Therefore, having come to this temporary miserable world... Wow, that's three times tonight Krishna has said that this world is miserable. Three times. Engage in loving service unto me. The message has been consistent. Final verse. Engage your mind always in thinking of me. Become my devotee. Offer obeisances to me and worship me. Being completely absorbed in me, surely you will come to me. This verse is also repeated at the end of chapter 18. So let's see. Engage your mind always in thinking of Krishna. Become Krishna's devotee. Offer obeisances and worship. Are we going to worship Krishna tonight? All right. Being completely absorbed in him, surely you will come to him. So we don't have time for the next part. So we'll pick up tomorrow in chapter 10. Tomorrow we'll hear the four nutshell verses of this Bhagavad Gita.